to the lucky 13th episode of Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies with me, your supporting actress, Lisa Schmeiser.
And I'm writer, director, producer, star, Philip Michaels.
I'm just so lucky to share this with you. I handle the craft
services, a gaffer, best boy. I do a lot around here.
He also wrangles the animals. Many animals are harmed in the making of this podcast. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about that part, though.
So what do we do on this podcast?
We ruin movies.
Yes. Are they movies that we've seen?
Not always.
No, not usually.
Remember, the premise of this podcast, for those of you who are just tuning in and missed the first 12 episodes, we watch the trailers, we ruthlessly prejudge, we engage in shameless supposition, and then we move on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we talking about tonight,
Lisa? I have to tell you about this trailer I saw when I went to see Ant-Man.
This is the third episode in a row built around Ant-Man.
It's not. I'm just explaining how I came to see this trailer because I don't want people thinking I trawl for these things or something. I have standards, for heaven's sakes.
Yes.
Anyway,
driving around at night looking for strange trailers to pick up, not seeing any trailers at home. So.
Hey, baby, I've got a Miramax tag. Do you? Miramax? Oh, it's been so long.
I've got a screener. Got a screener.
Yes, more. Give it to mama. Anyway, the trailer, and I have not been able to get this out of my mind because there are so many things that
that's a sign of a good trailer.
Well, it's a sign of it's a good trailer. I think the movie's going to be a wreck, and which is appropriate because it's about shipwrecks.
Hey.
And it's called The Finest Hours. Mm-hmm. And from what I've been able to divine from the trailer, several actors took money to slaughter the New England accent in what basically looks like a combination between A Perfect Storm, or The Perfect Storm. I can't remember which it was.
It's the Perfect Storm.
Yeah, it's like
because if it's so perfect, why don't you marry it? I kept waiting for one of the characters to say to George Clooney.
Anyway, it's like a combination between The Perfect Storm and that movie we saw, Teenage Freedom on a Boat.
Yes. The Ship of Rock or Rock
Whatever
Ship.
It's called. Yeah, it had Chris O'Dowd in it, I believe, as the Sad Sack. And Colin
and
Firth
Bill Nighy is in it.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman is slumming. Yeah. And like the reason we saw it was like 2/3 of the cast of the IT Crowd was in that movie. And we realized only then that Richard Ayoade, who is the missing third, is like the funny part.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had seen this movie called that was the cat knocking things down.
The cat is knocking things down, for those of you who would like to listen to loud, unexplained noises. Unexplained is also a word.
Anyway, long story short, Teenage Freedom on a Boat, which is basically about like a last minute improbable rescue of some sort. Because there is, of course,
I think it's largely about rock and roll and freedom.
But there's a last minute rescue because the boat is not seaworthy.
Right.
And
the boat on which they are broadcasting their pirate radio station.
So, we should probably look up what Teenage Freedom on a Boat after. Anyway, long story.
Rock, I want to say. Rock Ship.
I think you're confusing with School of Rock.
No, well, I think it was the sequel.
Okay, we're going
to... Or a prequel.
We're going to drive viewers crazy. Upshot is this movie that had Philip Seymour Hoffman and Bill Nighy ends with, like, a bunch of humble civilians running around to rescue some DJs using a bunch of dinghies and scuppers and other tiny aquatic craft.
Yes.
Anyway, this movie looks like a combination of that plus The Perfect Storm, because there's some massive CGI waves. There's Chris Pine with a really suspect accent. There's a woman named Holiday Granger who's doing things to the letter R that should be outlawed.
The you made me watch this trailer to implant it in my brain. So that
I did.
As part of our marriage vows, we each have to have the same horrible things.
We have to suffer together. It brings us closer.
And I've decided that this movie is going to be called Wahlberg's at Sea.
There are no Wahlbergs in it.
I know, but it's because they couldn't afford Wahlberg. So
they have the emergency backup Affleck in it.
So it's like they took the teddy bear movie and showed it to the cast and said, talk like that.
This is true.
So
everyone talks like it's a stum. It's a stum of a century.
Yes, it's not The Finest Hours. It's The Finest Hours.
Hours, yeah. And
Patriots!
No, so it's anyway.
You ain't us because you hate us!
So this movie stars Chris Pine as the titular hero.
Finest Hour. Yeah. Bob Finest Hour. Yes. He's the titular hero.
Eric Bana is the supervisor who sends him out to sea during a terrible storm.
Because there's a ship that's been cleaved in two.
Cleaved in twain.
Yes.
Yes. Emergency backup Affleck is on the ship, I believe.
I think he's called Casey Affleck.
I don't care.
Affleck the Duck.
We have an Affleck surplus in this country. Yeah. And I will leave it to the viewers to put in, I'll leave it to the listeners to put in as to which Affleck can go. But okay. We need to declutter our Afflecks.
Yes.
We have a surplus.
Not since the great Baldwin boom of the 1990s.
The great, yes.
Has our cast list been so leaden down with
I feel
people
like
from
we should do
family.
KonMari on the Baldwin family, too. Have you heard of KonMari?
No.
It's this decluttering technique this woman Marie Kondo has been promoting.
Okay.
And the idea is that you take out every one of your objects and you think back to your relationship with that object and you thank that object for its service to you and its relationship, and then you ditch it. Or if you use the object on a regular basis.
You leave it by the side of the road. You say, I'll come back for you. You don't come back.
No, you get rid of it. You get out. Yeah. But the idea is that you have to very thoughtfully assess every one of your belongings. And this way, like, you can emotionally manage your decluttering. And I feel like we should KonMari the Baldwin clan.
Okay.
Well, I feel like we should take out Adam Baldwin.
Perhaps
Is Adam one of the... There's Alec...
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of other Baldwins.
Adam Baldwin is not related to the other Baldwins.
Oh, well, I feel like...
James Baldwin also not related to the Baldwins.
Well, can we declutter Adam Baldwin
I went to John
anyway?
F. Baldwin Elementary School. He was not a Baldwin either.
No.
Quite a different
I just want to declutter
Baldwin.
The Baldwins that are orbiting Alec Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, long story short, this movie, The
are
Finest
Are we still
Hour.
Talking about Wahlberg's at Sea?
Yes. Yes, okay. We are. With emergency surplus Affleck and Captain Kirk and some nice lady in college.
And Holiday Granger.
Granger. So this thing is terrible.
Yeah, you know, we want to talk about Chris Pine's accent. There's a moment in the trailer where Holiday Granger says, as flatly as a human being could deliver such a line, you're sending him out there to die. It's like Joe Quimby from The Simpsons. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, you're sending him on a suicide mission.
Well, like...
More chowder.
I question how this movie is going to do, because, one, I think a lot of people who watch the trailer, since, you know, it was in front of other... modestly regarded movies. I think people who watch this trailer are like, didn't I see this movie when it was called The Perfect Storm? Because those New Englanders always going off to drown themselves.
Yep.
I also feel like this movie is not going to do well because they're going to have it out in the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a bad winter for New England this year. The Farmer's Almanac said so. So I'm trying to imagine why people would like dig out their car from under the snow drifts, heat up their car, move around the black ice, skid into the cinematic parking lot, pay their $25 to go see a movie with their sweetheart, buy a bucket of popcorn, and then watch people freeze their ass off in 1950s New England. Like, I just can't see that being a pleasant escape from the rigors of the 2015-2016 winter. And finally, if you're going to see one disastrous movie set in snow this year, it's going to be Everest.
Yep.
Which, in a weird roundabout way, The Perfect Storm had John Hawkes in it as one of the doomed seamen, and Everest, which is another trailer I saw, has John Hawkes in it as a doomed hiker. So
I think this is what we call a segue.
I think also the lesson here is if John Hawke is in your movie, he's probably going to die. They should really just have like the John Hawke death clock.
He should wear the little to tie it back into Captain Kirk. He should be wearing the red shirt.
Red shirt. I don't know if he'd ever wear work security. He's kind of wiry.
Well, anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've pulled up the. I know next to nothing about this movie other than everyone dies.
I cried during the trailer. Believe it or not.
Well, you are a sensitive person.
Everyone who listens to this podcast probably just like snorted incredulously
and
barked
true.
A laugh.
You have a good heart. Oh. Whereas I am black-hearted.
And no, it's not purely based on John Krakauer's Into Thin Air, and I suspect the reason it's not 100% based on it is one, Krakauer is a wonderful journalist, but seems like he'd be a tough collaborator.
Mm-hmm.
And two, there are actually a bunch of conflicting accounts as to who was responsible for the staggering number of deaths that took place during the 1996 Everest hiking season. But this movie, Everest, is about that terrible season on the summit when you had two parties that were caught in a once-in-a-lifetime blizzard at the summit. They got lost on the subsequent way down. There were people who wandered out into the snow to die. There was one man who was left for dead and managed to claw his way back to camp with only a minimal loss of limbs. The real tragedy, though, was one of the guides, Rob Hall, he put his client's safety first. He knew he was going to die, and he basically talked to his pregnant wife over satellite phone. And it
And that's, I think, going to be a major focus of the movie.
Tearjerker.
One would guess. So, I have not wanted to see a movie less since the movie about the soccer players who ate each other.
I saw that.
Oh, of course you did.
I was really puzzled as to why they didn't eat Vincent Spano first.
Because he's stringy?
He was beefy, actually.
Oh, okay.
Like, poor Ileana
Douglas. I'm confusing poor him with Ileana, Vincent Gallo.
Yeah, no, Ileana Douglas was, like, looking at him with, like, open longing and a bottle of Worcestershire sauce for, like, the 10 minutes she was in the movie.
Now I'm envisioning it like it's a Warner Brothers cartoon from the 1930s. Everyone's just, like, turning into a giant ham. And, like, the character is licking his lips.
No, and if you read the book that the movie Alive is based on, which I actually did. The people who wrote the book emphasized that they were not like, hooray, cannibalism at last, one of society's taboos, we have an excuse. Like, they were like, we treated it like the Eucharist. We tried to be mindful of what this meant, and we tried to put it in an appropriate context and understand it as a sacrifice. And the movie, again, you're watching it and you're like, take down Vincent Gallo. He's got a quads. You know? I think Ethan Hawke was in that too.
I believe
it was some Dead Poets Society dude.
Anyway, author Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
He had a really nice run at AMA. Anyway, Everest, I don't think I'm going to see because I've read the John Krakauer book. It's an amazing book. I don't think I need to see my imagination on screen that vividly, because if I was bawling through the trailer, and like people are looking at me, giving me the eye, because I was just during the trailer, I don't think I'm going to be any, like the minute that I see Jake Gyllenhaal is playing Rob Hall, the minute I see him on the screen, I'm just going to be just soggy and awful and no. But I think that if you're going to see one snowy disaster movie this fall, it's going to be this one and not, you're sending him out to die.
Wahlberg's at Sea. I believe we've
surplus Affleck.
We've agreed. Wahlberg's at Sea with surplus Affleck.
Yes, declutter your Afflecks today. So.
Oh, I hope Seth MacFarlane has a cameo in that movie.
Maybe they use him as a buoy.
Great.
He just bobs there, grinning that self-satisfied little grin on his face, singing his show tune standards. He has a nice voice.
He does. He has a lovely singing voice.
I still would like to see him freeze in the icy Atlantic.
Okay.
Remember, I'm the sensitive one.
Yes. Good heart on that one.
Maybe I do.
I wonder what the block-hearted fellow has to say. Anyhow, nothing. Lisa, are there any books that you would like to, that are turning into movies that you would like to see
this year? The one trailer I'm actually super, super excited about. They're turning The Martian into a movie, and
this is, of course, the 1950s sitcom starring.
Yeah, right. No, there's
Bill Bixby.
There's this dude named Andy Weir who self-published this great book called The Martian. We actually did a podcast on it for the Incomparable Book Club. And
I don't listen to the Incomparable.
No, well, it's probably for the better. Mm. And the big deal about The Martian as a book is it's funny and fast-paced and engaging, and it manages to imbue, the whole book is imbued with this idea that science is fun, science is a problem solver, don't doubt the resilience of the human spirit, and also don't doubt the ability of people to sacrifice and collaborate for a greater good. It really is the kind of book where you're like, humanity, yeah! And science, yeah! It's just, it was this big, large-hearted thing, And I say this as somebody who likes to sleep. I stayed up one night until 3:30 at night finishing it because I just couldn't wait to see what happens. Anyway, it's Ridley Scott directed the movie. It's got Matt Damon in it.
And there you run into my first concern about the movie. And then from all the buzz around it, it's getting very good buzz. But Ridley Scott, who I like as a director. Thelma and Louise is great. Alien is great. Hey, let's talk about Alien for a moment.
Uh-huh.
You and I went to go see that in a theater on a big screen. It was the first time you ever saw it. You never slept. Of course, we showed it to our niece a few years ago.
And she's all...
She thought it was the most predictable thing in the world.
Oh, kids today.
Kids today, they don't appreciate
it. I actually have a lot of confidence in Ridley Scott.
But my point is, Ridley Scott is a lot of things, and he's a very good director. Not recently, but a pretty good director. One thing I don't think of him doing very well is funny.
Again, I disagree because I think Thelma and Louise is a hilarious movie.
Okay, well, Alien, not really a laugh a minute.
I'm gonna keep shouting Thelma and Louise, and the reason I'm gonna
Blade Runner is not a good comedy.
But the thing, what he did right in Thelma and Louise is he gave the actresses enough space to bring their funny to the table, mm-hmm. because the repartee between Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon is downright hilarious. The affection that they have for their characters is evident in how they in how they portray them. The scenes with Brad Pitt are frankly comic gold.
Those are good, but that's Brad Pitt.
Again, and the thing is what I'm saying here is originally when I found out that Matt Damon was the dude for this, I kind of gave it the side eye, mm-hmm. because in the book, Mark Watney frankly strikes me as a total dweeb. Mm-hmm. And like think Fisher Stevens in the 1980s style dweeb.
Oh dear.
Or Thomas Middleditch today. Or something like that. He's a guy who loves science and is unprepossessing and funny. But, you know, like when you look at Matt Damon, you think he's like a solid hunk of American filet mignon, and he smiles, and the teeth are preternaturally shiny, and the eyes are blue, and they're sparkly, and all that. But Damon is also really a funny actor.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel confident that he'll bring the funny to it. Because the Mark Watney character in The Martian, he's the engine that drives the humor. All of the humor is in how he frames things and reacts to them and says stuff. Everybody else is like super serious, all, oh my God, we stranded a guy on Mars. And he's like, so, growing potatoes in my own poop. And,
does he do a little like
1930s
dance number? Poop.
Well, I really hope that Matt Damon does now.
Yeah. I hope they add
the point that to is the that Watney card. The point is that Mark Watney is the humor engine in the book, mm-hmm. and I feel confident that Matt Damon can serve that in the movie. And you also have Donald Glover and Kristen Wiig in it, and both of them are, while they're both very funny people, they're not over the top. They're both really great as contextually funny. Like, remember in Knocked Up how funny Kristen Wiig was with just the underhanded way she'd say stuff?
Oh yeah.
And Donald Glover's done great jobs being reactive to things. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty confident that this is going to be a great movie, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm seeing Jessica Chastain and Sean Bean in the cast. Again, not really known for their...
They don't have to be, though. You only need one or two really funny people.
Okay.
And they've got Jeff Daniels, so I think he'll be okay, too. You just need people that Damon can play off of.
You know what was a movie that didn't take itself too seriously? Gladiator by Ridley Scott. That was not a movie that crawled up its own ass and just...
Well, again, look at
the... Rome and unleash hell. That's my Russell Crowe, by the way.
Look at the combination of actor and director.
Workshop in that invitation.
Again, one of the things that Ridley Scott does is he gives the actor space, for better or for worse, to put their own interpretation on it. And if you have someone like Sigourney Weaver, who's a very thoughtful, very humane actress, that's how you get Alien. Mm-hmm. And if you have somebody like Harrison Ford, whose chief feature is that he's closed off and sardonic, that works for Blade Runner. Just like Rutger Hauer is prone to operatic excess, which is why his portrayal is brilliant as well.
They don't advertise for ex-killers in the newspaper. That's me. Ex-killer.
Told you, closed off and sardonic.
Ex-Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I am one of the few people in, this is the real talk portion of the Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the version of Blade Runner with the voiceover. I really do. I like the voiceover because I like cheap noir,
mm-hmm.
and it has a cheap noir element to it. Mm-hmm. And, I prefer that to the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly.
Okay.
And I will defend Harrison Ford's...
that's basically your defend the indefensible.
This is my unjustly maligned.
Anthony Johnson, if you're listening.
I will defend the original cut of Blade Runner against all comers.
I think you should reach out to Anthony about that, and I think people would like to listen to that.
All right.
So no, I think Ridley Scott. Ridley.
Ridley Squat.
Yes, Ridley Squat. Yeah, it's the cross. It's the CrossFitter.
Suddenly, we're writers for Mad Magazine. Ridley Squat is doing the Martin.
And it's nothing but like Martin Scorsese, yes, and Steve Martin, and Martin Donovan, and Martin Short.
Exactly.
Oh God, that would be a terrible movie.
Why hasn't Mad Magazine hired us in the 5 seconds we've been talking about this?
Can we make the noises like Don, what's his name?
Don Martin.
Yes, Don Martin!
Who would appear in The Martin by Ridley Squat.
And he'd walk on screen and go, Florgets! And walk off. Flangdoodle.
Spy versus spy would be in there somehow. Snappy answers to stupid questions.
You know, maybe we should do these podcasts on Friday after we've after happy hour. I'm just saying that anyway.
Every hour is happy hour.
No, the thing I'm really looking forward to is I was thinking about this tonight at dinner because I was like, I'm going to have to pull together my nerd posse so that we can see the movie together.
Do you have a little floodlight that you launch into the sky?
No, but I can get Brian to make one for me.
Oh, he could.
Because he's pretty much, yeah, you know my nerd posse.
I know your nerd posse.
Anyway, I'm going to do it because I want to see this in a group of people because I want those moments where everyone goes, oh, or yeah, yep. And I want that communal experience. Like, this was actually the thing that was missing from the Avengers, frankly, is people were kind of snickering and there's like a wave of stuff going through the crowd, but there weren't any, people weren't communally engaged. They weren't communally engaged in Jurassic Park. I kind of want just one movie experience this summer where everybody is so into the movie and so mm-hmm. and so entranced by it that they react to it.
As someone who doesn't go to movies and theaters so much anymore.
No, which is why you have a movie podcast. And,
yes.
Having abdicated from cinema culture, let me launch a podcast.
I believe I watch like 3 or 4 movies a week. I just do it from the comfort of my home, mm-hmm. As a sensible person would. But one of the things you give up is that communal experience. I remember going to the first Batman movie, mm-hmm. 1989's Batman Children, and not Batman Begins.
Yes.
We've already ranked Batmans.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
And people just cheering when the opening credits, when they pull back and it's the Batman logo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was one time when I went to see, I can't even remember the movie, but what I remember, oh no, it was a nerd movie. And the uh-huh. only reason I remember is because...
That is a shock.
Because there was a trailer for this movie called Devil's Own, which featured Harrison Ford and Brad Pitt.
Also doing, I believe, criminal accents.
Horrible accents. Yeah. But Harrison Ford came on and everyone went, yay! Because he was Han Solo. And Brad Pitt came on and the entire theater as one yelled, boo!
I believe you were at one of the Star
boo!
Wars movies.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. It was. And as one, people really got into the experience of viewing and participating with one another. It was like this great collaborative thing. Mm-hmm. That's a great experience to have at the movies, and I'm not sure it happens that much anymore.
There's been a movie kind of on my brain today, because I was listening to Greg Proop's podcast, mm-hmm. The Smartest Man in the World podcast, if you're looking for a podcast to follow.
Since Lord knows we don't do it often enough.
Mm-hmm. And told a story about he happened to be on the set of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves the day mm-hmm. Sean Connery filmed his 10-second cameo as King Richard the Lionheart.
That's just such a bad... You would be better off with George Hamilton doing Zorro the Gay Blade as Richard the Lionhearted,
but, frankly. But, uh-huh. The one thing I remember about going to this movie
uh-huh.
is it was the one moment in this...
Airless...
joyless slog of a film.
All right,
film.
Children, again, this movie came out in the summer of 1991. And mm-hmm. the only reason
And it was the most anticipated movie of the summer. Because it had that great trailer where it showed
And it
the,
had a horrible it, song associated
but,
with it.
But uh-huh. it had the great trailer with the arrow's eye view of Robin Hood shooting the arrow and it goes right into the thing.
Yeah.
And splits the other arrow and you're all, woo, this is going to be a great movie. It was not a great movie.
It was awful.
It was, as I said, a joyless slog, and we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah.
But the one moment that the audience awoke from its stupor.
Yeah.
And
it's resentful stupor.
It's resentful feelings of, we have sat through 4 hours. It is like, it feels like you are watching Das Boot without the benefit of a good movie. And
or Horsebuckled. Who is the lead in Das Boot?
Jürgen Prochnow.
Yeah. Oh, Jürgen Prochnow.
Jürgen Prochnow is a handsome gentleman. Friends, I've committed to one team, but if Jürgen Prochnow comes a beckoning, I would consider.
Not today, I would hope.
No.
He would have to.
Not
be
now.
Yeah.
Okay. If Jürgen Prochnow builds a time machine,
slingshots into the year 2015,
and says,
and propositions Phil an explicitly filthy High German,
we'd at least have a discussion. But
we'd open our marriage.
But let's go back to the actual topic at hand, which is Robin Hood? Sure.
Yeah. it's that horror. So Robin Hood, 1991.
But the end.
I
the
feel
end.
Like you should set the scene for children.
Oh, let me just talk about the end because this, to close the circle on this point.
Uh-huh.
which was, we've had this horrible movie for 8 days.
Yeah.
And it's the wedding between Robin Hood and Maid Marian, and then they're about to be married, and then someone goes, "Halt!" And it's you cut, and it's Sean Connery. And the entire audience, who at this point was murmuring its disapproval at everything, just goes, "Oh!"
Yes.
And there was just that fleeting moment of happiness to see, oh, here's someone who can bring joy to this picture.
Oh, it's a grown up.
Yeah. And so that I've been thinking about Robin Hood ever since hearing the very funny story that Greg Proops told about what a disaster that movie was. Because literally, you have a movie that is about a guy who lives in the woods with his buddies, and they rob jerky rich people.
And they overthrow a government, and he gets to bang royalty.
And it... shouldn't that be a fun caper movie? And instead, it's this, everything is so sad here in England.
Also the worst... all of the complaints about Robin Hood, let us, we can't even rank them because it's like a complaint cloud, like a word cloud. So complaints. Number one, Christian Slater as Will Scarlet.
Oh man. I'm glad you brought this up.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, to set the scene, this was when Christian Slater was riding high, baby.
There was no cuffs in his future. Like, this was when Christian Slater was coming off of Pump Up the Volume.
He was coming off Heathers. This is why they put him in the movie. They said he is hot stuff.
He'll bring in the younglings.
And this was the movie where Christian Slater was exposed.
Well, he was
found out.
The problem with him is you can't have irony in a Kevin Costner movie.
Yeah.
Because the thing about Kevin Costner is when he is at the lead, at the center of his own movies, he is like a black hole, just sucking everything out of the room.
Sucking is a good word.
Oh, it's
for
just,
his performance.
No,
in that
like
movie.
I have seen 3 terrible Kevin Costner movies in the theater.
Yep,
I have seen this one.
Mm-hmm.
I went and saw Waterworld in 1995. And I want to add that when I saw Waterworld in 1995, I came equipped with double water pistols and I sprayed the screen every time I saw something improbable and I was still out like of water, like halfway through the movie.
Wow.
And I had a seafood dinner in me too. I should have been able to last longer. I wore a pirate hat. I was committed. I'm fun to hang out with.
You are fun to hang out with.
And, then the same sweet, wonderful person who suffered me for Waterworld also went to see The Postman with me.
He was
truly, epically awful.
You know what? He sounds like kind of a dummy. If I'm gonna be frank,
I am a spectacle when I see bad movies, and I am worth the phenomena. I am worth the pain and suffering.
You really do. It really is.
It becomes an interactive movie
experience. And please forgive this metaphor. You are like Ursula drawing her power.
Yes.
When a bad movie is on. Seriously. And I'm just thankful that no one has thrown like a trident at you. No.
There was a woman who wanted to.
Yeah, Troy.
Oh,
yes.
God, that was such a great bad movie.
Yeah, that was a very good bad movie.
Oh, my gosh, it's one of the greatest bad movies. But anyway, the thing is about Kevin Costner is when he's at the heart of his own movie, it's awful. It's tedious. It's boring. He desperately wants to be deep and significant. Like, you saw it with Dance. People saw it with Dances with Wolves, but they ignored the signs and plowed ahead anyway. And
we should also point out that in Robin Hood, he sports that Robin of Long Beach accent.
I think your taxation's totally unfair.
I have a brother. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, Friar Tuck. Will you bless this food?
Prince John, you are not a good ruler. They don't have Prince John in that movie. It's just the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yes, and it's Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman, who is the only one in that movie who has any demonstrable form of fun besides Sean Connery.
And the problem is it just looks gauche because, you know, it's unseemly compared to how everyone else is suffering. Because Morgan Freeman's also in it playing...
And he is the world's most dour Moor.
Well, because his eyes are rolled up the whole time at the ridiculousness of the situation in which he's found himself. I hope that he spent the entire shoot just mentally calculating all of the cool things he'd buy with the money that he was earning. And Mary Elizabeth Mastantonio is in it. In one of the most ridiculous Maid Marians I've ever seen. And this is saying a lot. Because her first appearance, of course, is when she is like head to toe in some shiny silver armor. She almost whoops Robin Hood's rear end. And then off tumbles the helmet. What so? The great Robin Hood almost bested by a woman. And then like two-thirds of the movie later, there's a scene where Sheriff of Nottingham almost overpowers her. And I'm like, this is the same woman who can wield a sword and whoop butt. Why is she not spanking this man with the flat of her broadsword? What is going on? It was just a dumb, inconsistent... It was done for all the wrong dramatic reasons. It was insulting to the character. Also, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio does not look like she grew up in England unless her parents moved there from Sicily when she was three. So...
My... favorite, air quotes, quite visible moment of the movie.
Yeah.
Any good Robin Hood movie has the movie where Robin Hood and Little John cross paths for the first time.
Robin Hood and Little John are walking through the forest.
Yeah. When the Disney animated movie is better than your...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I love Sir Hiss.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Basically... Robin and Little John meet up and have good-natured brawling to determine, oh, you've bested me, Robin. Now we're chums.
This is not at all homoerotic grappling.
Yeah, in this movie, it is like they hired an arbitration judge to come in and settle. Now, Robin, John, you both... It's just joyless.
Yeah.
It is a joyless movie. In a movie that really... So you don't want to do the Errol Flynn thing,
no.
But you want to have a little bit of a ha-ha to
what
to
I feel
Robin
like you
Hood
should
movie.
Do is you should make it like Ocean's 11 with the same ethos, where it's a bunch of rogues and scoundrels, and they get together, and like a third of the movie is devoted to the team coming together and discovering that underneath their different MOs, they really have the same sensibility and the same sense of fight for the little guy, and then the remaining two-thirds are them charming their way through the scheme and getting away with it.
Yep.
And...
You know what was a really good Robin Hood movie?
Hmm.
Robin and the Seven Hoods, which with Frank Sinatra and
Dean
Martin.
Oh, look, it's like
Martin.
The original Ocean's 11.
Yeah, huh?
So, no, I would totally love to see a...
Sammy Davis Jr. is Will Scarlet. Take that, Christian Slater.
Look, I'd love to see, and mind you, this is shocking coming from somebody who's not a self-professed Whedon person, but I honestly feel like Joss Whedon could do a heck of a Robin Hood movie, because he's always been really good at balancing out characters, the roles they play. In many ways, Firefly as a series seems to have a little bit of a Robin Hood ethos to it. So I would like to see a good Robin Hood. And I should also add, I don't dislike Kevin Costner as an actor. I will always really like that movie where it's Kevin Costner plays your drunk neighbor, Joan Allen.
The Upside of Anger.
Upside of Anger, yeah. I love that movie, and he's great in it. He and Joan Allen play off each other beautifully. It's just that you can't make him the lead because he's like an irony black hole.
Anytime he's playing... A dissolute athlete who knows his limitations.
Yeah, because he was not bad.
Tin Cup is great.
Yeah, I feel like Bull Durham is overrated.
Bull Durham is overrated.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. He's quite good in The Untouchables, because that really taps into...
Elliot Ness is kind of a...
It uses his limitations as an actor to full effect.
Yeah.
I understand he's good in that, where he plays the creepy, murdery guy. I understand that's okay. I haven't seen it.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's Mr. something or other. Well, now I'm going to pull up his filmography. Mm-hmm. Handwave.
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen Dances with Wolves.
Oh, wait,
actually.
You're right. He's like a serial killer. And then
Mr. Brooks.
And he discovers his daughter's a serial killer. That's right.
Mr.
And
Brooks.
He tries to figure out if
spoiler
he
alert.
Yeah. You know, but Mr. Brooks has been out for like a decade.
You know what was a movie that, oh God, Wyatt Earp. Oh, speaking of joyless.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. And it doesn't help that came out after Tombstone, which is the most fun movie ever made.
Oh, Tombstone. Well, Tombstone benefited from phenomenal casting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem of Wyatt Earp, is it did not.
This, really good Kevin Costner performance, again, because let's use his limitations to full effect. I really enjoyed A Perfect World, which is a Clint Eastwood movie where he's a convict on the run, picks up a kid as a hostage.
Yeah,
it's a good movie.
Yeah, no, if you have Kevin Costner playing a flawed dude who basically uses his flaw as the basis upon which to build a career,
yeah,
then you're set. But if you have him as, I'm going to make a statement and redeem myself, and I am really a man of sterling character underneath this rough-hewn Robin of Long Beach exterior, it doesn't work. Like,
nope.
And granted, I honestly don't think... I think the only way Waterworld would work is if you made it now, maybe as an animated or CGI type film. I don't think it's a good live action film.
Well, the people have gills, for heaven's sakes.
Well, and they're terrible, which is why, again, you make it like it's an animated film, because there's something to be said for it. But dude, The Postman is just unforgivable. It's a not bad sci-fi novel by David Brin. Mm-hmm. And the movie is just... There are, like, sci-fi channel movies that are more plausible wow. about, like, a post-apocalyptic civilization rebuilding hoo-ha.
That is some strong verbiage.
Yeah. So, and again, I liked the David Brin book. I thought it made well, I'm a sucker for post-apocalyptic anything. And any book that mentions the vital necessity of tooth hygiene in the afterscape is going to get my attention. It did. There's, like, a whole paragraph on flossing. Mm. Gingivitis can kill you, you know.
I did, sure.
And the protagonist apparently watched someone die of it, which is why we got treated to an entire paragraph on the importance of keeping your tooth supplies with you at all times.
Somehow I feel like there was the American Dental Association used their pressure tactics.
On David Brin to get him to put that paragraph in there?
Send him some sweet ADA money. Four out of five dentists will write you a check.
If you put the fear of gingivitis into young sci-fi readers. If you make
people floss.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Kevin Costner, interesting case because limited, good mm-hmm. in some roles. He wants desperately to do more and be iconic. And no, not going to happen.
So that's Kevin Costner's career wrapped up in a bow.
It is.
What have we learned today, Lisa?
We have learned that I am not going to see what is probably going to be the superior icy disaster movie of the fall.
Which is Everest.
We have learned that the people of, I would say, the greater New England area should probably sue whatever dialect coaches were involved in Chris Pine Will Go on a Dinghy, or whatever that movie is called, with the surplus Affleck. I can't be bothered to remember. I'm not going to go see it.
Park your car in the harbor.
Oh, God. Yeah. I feel like we should apologize to New Englanders just for them to listen to that. They must mm-hmm. be really tired of it. And we've learned that The Martian, I'm really, really looking forward to because I'm gonna go with my people.
Cool.
And we'll do that. I worry about the future of this podcast over the next few months. And here's why I worry is we're heading into...
Go ahead.
We're heading into awards season, Phil.
Oh, boy.
It's all going to be like deadly earnest things about the human condition and love and unfairness and how desperately people want to have an Oscar.
Well, there's no bigger fan of deadly earnest movies than myself, so obviously.
You actually, between the two of us, you handle the deadly earnest movies a lot better than I do.
I suppose. I'll tolerate them for... More, I won't dismiss them out of hand.
I'm the only person who went to see Philadelphia because I was genuinely curious about what the downtown looked like.
Oh, wow. Yeah, sure.
So you have that going for you. Like, mm-hmm. you know, is it an indie movie? I'll probably see it. Is it a really bad movie? Oh, I'll happily see it. Is it a nerd movie? I'm there. Is it something that's going to make me want to open a vein because it talks about the perfidy of human nature and the beautiful futility of hope? Have fun.
Mm.
Yeah. Maybe we can devote a future podcast to talking about how watching Billy Bob Thornton and Bill Paxton find money and
oh yeah, them. A Simple Plan.
Thank you, A Simple
would
Plan
would be the movie.
Yeah,
that's a much punchier title than the one you were coming up with.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Two people named Bill find money. It doesn't work.
No.
But we saw that when we were early in our dating life.
Yes.
And we came out of the movie theater and I was irate with you.
Yeah, oh, you did not like that movie.
Exactly. Why would you want to feel bad about yourself after that? So maybe that's a future podcast. So yeah.
Yeah.
The good news is that in January, the terrible stuff comes back in the theater. So who knows?
I think you are giving far too much credit to Oscar bait movies.
Okay.
Because I think those can be pretty bad.
Yeah.
There's a certain delight.
Mm-hmm.
In an Oscar bait movie where people do not take the bait.
Can you name one?
Yeah, I off the top of my head, mm-hmm. The Jim Carrey, a lot of Jim Carrey movies from the 1990s.
Oh my gosh, you know what I just thought of? That might be an Oscar. I Am Sam.
Yes.
Sean Penn.
Yep.
I almost said Sean Connery. That would have been a whole different movie. Oh my God. Can you imagine that one?
No.
No, because every time I see even a snippet of I Am Sam, I instantly flash to Robert Downey Jr.'s speech in Tropic Thunder.
Yep.
about how you have to commit. We don't need to repeat it. I'm not. I'm just saying that, like, Robert Downey's speech has fatally ruined any of those things where anybody plays somebody who is not neurotypically normal.
But The Truman Show is the one I was struggling to name. And he did that other one where he owned a movie theater.
And was it The Majestic?
The Majestic, yes. Yeah. And it was just Jim Carrey every award season was take me seriously.
The thing is, The Man in the Moon was his last big take me seriously.
No, The Majestic came out after.
Okay,
that.
Yeah, because Man in the Moon was the last one I saw, and yeah. I was kind of like, wow, this mm-hmm. is. Because that was back when Courtney Love was still making a bid for serious thespianship as well. Because she did that, and she did Larry Flint, which was Woody Harrelson's showy, I can transform myself.
And he got an Oscar nomination.
Exactly. I sometimes feel like you shouldn't reward that stuff.
No. But when it goes horribly wrong, mm-hmm. it's kind of a delight to see.
Okay, good.
So, yeah. I don't fear for the future of this podcast at all. I think we will have plenty to discuss.
Good.
As we slouch our way through award season.
Okay, excellent. Well, Phil, I want to say, since I am but a humble bit player,
yep.
number 58 down on the credits in IMDb, I really appreciate the opportunity to say as much as I was allowed to.
Kid, I think you got something. You could be a star one day. One day.
Mm-hmm. One day I could have my own podcast.
Let's not go crazy.
I'm leaning in, Phil. This has been Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies with Lisa Schmeiser and Philip Michaels. Thank you.
Good night. I didn't even debut my new character. Marlon Brando, obsessed Apple product guy.
Oh, God, no, because the funniest part of that Matrix is like, I need you to stop talking.
Stop talking like that. tell me about the Apple Watch. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording now.